heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
Grizzlies wrap up the pre-All-Star break schedule with a game tonight at FedEx Forum against the Pelicans. We talk about that one, some trades around the league, how they affect the Grizzlies, and a look at some of the things that have been happening on the Grizzlies roster. All of that, maybe a touch more. You are Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody. Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. Sorry I wasn't with you yesterday. Had a few things crop up last minute that stopped me from being able to record the podcast as normal after the Nets game, so my apologies. We'll talk a bit about the Nets game. Not much to really delve into too deeply, but I'll get to that in just a second. But again, my apologies. Thank you for sticking with me. Thank you for listening and downloading this particular episode, because we're gonna bring you, of course, the Pelicans preview as we wrap up the pre-All-Star break portion of the schedule for the Grizzlies. And look around the league at some trades, talk about if anything has changed with regard to the Grizzlies, and a few other things, including the fact that the Grizzlies no longer will have a D-League team in South Haven, but rather a G-League team in South Haven. But first, back to the Nets game on Monday night. You knew the Grizzlies were going to win. I knew the Grizzlies were going to win. The Nets knew the Grizzlies were going to win. So, what's to discuss? Well, it wasn't quite that simple. The Nets are a scrappy bunch. They're a really bad basketball team. But they are a scrappy bunch, so that is something, I suppose. The Grizzlies in this ballgame, I mean, when you're facing a team that's lost 12 straight, and you give them their 13th loss, and you know that if they make a little push, you can probably just push back, then it's probably just a matter of time before you get the job done. And the Grizzlies pretty much held the Nets at arm's length throughout this one to get the win. A few talking points, though. A lot of people were tweeting me and were emailing me and asking me, and I'm with you. Brandon Wright was tremendous. This was one of his if you could call it a signature game, I guess. You know, there have just been not been very many, period, for the Grizzlies. But this was a lot of what you like to see from Brandon Wright. Action in the pick and roll, his ability to slip, boom, go to the basket, all those things that the quickness, the athleticism, drawing attention from defenses, all those things that really help, particularly on the second unit, that help to keep things flowing and to give the Grizzlies opportunities to score points on a group that sometimes, depending on how Vince Carter feels or, you know, what kind of game Zebo's having, that unit can be a little bit shy. Brandon Wright changes that complexion. And then, of course, you can play with Mike Conley in a tremendous pick-and-roll combo. He can pick and roll with other guys, too. He's a really, you could tell in that ball game, it gave you a really good sense of what kind of piece he can be going forward. So, now, as far as, you know, can you do that against everybody? I mean, the Nets are a particularly compliant team. You know, you're playing a group that isn't especially good and isn't especially athletic. The guys that are young and not, you know, not very polished. So yeah, I mean, it's easier to get your buckets against those guys. But still, you could see the things that he was capable of. A very impressive performance, 7 of 9 from the field, 17 points in his 21 minutes or so. A few other things to get to from the game. I thought it was interesting that Tony Allen had his planned recovery day. You know, it's weird that they flew him up there anyway. So I don't know. To me, that doesn't seem very planned. If it was a planned recovery day and it's a one-game road trip, I don't know why you don't just leave him at home, you know, and save the flight, which is, you know, a little extra strain on the body, not a lot, but a little bit. And I don't know why you would do that, but in any event, and it's weird, you know, as we talked about with the Chandler Parsons thing, it's just weird to see these recovery days come, you know, right before the All-Star break. Now, it could be that there are particular metrics that they're looking at as they go through and analyze these guys, because you probably know, but maybe you don't realize how detailed their metrics are. I mean, they really get down to the science of the stuff. They get down to the nuts and bolts. They've got measurements of every little detail for all these guys. And if they see something they don't like, if they see something they don't like, just a little something that's off, you know, maybe a particular measure stress, or, you know, they measure heart rates, they measure all that stuff. If they just don't like something, then they may slip something, an extra recovery day. You know, they want to keep the stress levels down on the body as much as they can. So maybe that was part of it. You know, it's listed as a planned recovery day. I don't know if that necessarily means that it was planned, you know, weeks ago. I have no idea. I think that's probably just their new phrase for rest. So that's maybe you just don't want to call it rest. I don't know. But in any event, he rested in this ball game. Now, Vince Carter did not rest, has not really rested much, and at his age, you know, is still vibrant as ever, can give you 20 to 25 minutes of good, solid action as he did in this one, hit four threes again. You know, everything he does, he's pretty much the oldest guy to do it, or one of the oldest guys to do it. I mean, anything, he scored 20 points, 30, it doesn't, whatever, throw it on the list. You know, there have not been that many basketball players 40 years old or more who have still been able to be even remotely productive. And the ones that have pretty much been almost exclusively Hall of Famers, and Vince is, you know, in that category, I would say. I don't know, you know, his Hall of Fame, that'll be an interesting discussion, but I feel like he's probably done enough. But he's still, listen, man, he's doing enough to, you know, where you, I would have thought for sure when he signed his deal 3 years ago that would have been it. You know, at the end of 3 years, you're done. Now he's going to push probably for a multi-year deal this offseason, and he may get it. Now, maybe that second year, maybe it's a two-year deal, and the second year is non-guaranteed or something like that. But I bet you he'll get at least nominally a two-year deal at some level. His play has been good. He stayed relatively healthy. Looks as good as he's ever looked for the Grizzlies. I mean, it's impressive. It really is. A near triple-double for Marc Gasol. Very smooth, not especially effective on the offensive end, but did everything he needed to do and was very good at helping to grease the wheels a bit and get the playmaking going for the team. You know, Mike Conley's the guy that stands out, obviously, on the good side of the ledger, because his, again, 32 points on 16 shots. He gets to the foul line 11 times. Love, love, love all of that. Give me all of that. 11 times the foul line. His free throw rate, Conley's at a career high. It's such a vital part of his game. You know, he's finishing at the basket at a 60% clip, which is, you know, his career high. He's getting fouled more than ever. You know, that he's at a career high rate there. He's doing all that stuff, and I think part of what's making it so effective with Mike is the ability. In this is something I wrote about last week. I think David Fizdale has done a better job than anyone else thus far with Mike of not only moving him off the ball. Some guys have moved him off the ball. He's the team's, in my mind, he's the team's best shooter, with, you know, greatest respect to Troy Daniels, who is maybe the streakiest shooter and the hottest shooter, potentially. But Mike Conley's the best shooter to me on the team. And but you know, you get him off the ball and you give him the ability to take that three and to maybe have a catch and shoot or something like that. That's good. But that's not really what I'm talking about. I think what's taken his game to the next level has been the stuff the Grizzlies run to get Mike Conley the ball on the move. You know, it's the dribble handoffs off that curl. You know, the pick and roll stuff that is kind of impromptu. Running him off screens and giving him that pass while he, you know, right as he gets the timing of that move down so that he's got the ability to turn the corner against his man and get to the basket. You know, they've done that really effectively. And you see every game Mike getting more and more opportunities to get the ball on the catch while moving, to give him that extra momentum against his opponent. He's still so quick. And then, you know, his ability with the dribble is better than ever. He's got such a tight handle that he can pull that thing back, get his pull-up jumper. His jumpers off the dribble have been really good. So now you have to respect that as an opponent, which means that that gives you even more opportunity to use that to your advantage and drive to the basket and finish. So all this stuff is coming together really well, and I think that was all part of the plan. You know, the way they spaced the offense, yeah, that's all done with the idea to get Mike Conley the ball on that situation. And I'm going to come back to that in just a second because there's a point on that I want to make, but I don't want to skip Chandler Parsons 25 minutes. 2 points, 7 rebounds for Parsons, 2 assists, 4 shots. You know, guys, I think at this point we all just kind of have to start talking and being honest here and wondering if after the All-Star break, and I'll probably talk a lot more about this next week when we've got a whole stretch of shows where there are not going to be any games and we're going to be talking trade deadline and that kind of stuff. But just kind of put this in the back of your mind. I mean, should Chandler Parsons be starting after the All-Star break if he can't go 30 minutes? If you continue with this minutes restriction that has been going on all season long, isn't it more disruptive to have it like this? Just something to think about. I'm debating that myself, but I think we all have to kind of come to the realization that this thing is not getting better, and his performance is not improving. He doesn't seem to be on any kind of an upward move. He seems to have plateaued. You know, and the minutes have gone up slightly, but the performance is not. And it's, you know, he's just there. And for a guy that's a max guy, and for a guy that they've continued to move the goalposts about when they expect his recovery to be, but would anybody expect, is it reasonable to expect at all at any point this year for him to be effective, playoffs or whatever? No, not at all. So just bear that in mind. What do they do with Parsons after the break? We'll come back to that next week on the show. Just something to think about. Now, back to the Mike Conley thing, and this also informs my view on the trade deadline to some extent, because I put a poll up yesterday or day before, I guess, talking about, would the Grizzlies, if the Grizzlies offer a package of Jarrell Martin and Andrew Harrison, would that be enough to get you even a small bench upgrade? And here I'm thinking, you know, in the backup point guard spot. And 2/3 of you said no, it would not. 1/3 of you said yes. And I think that package, to me, I bring that package up because I think it's the most logical one that they could offer. You know, Andrew Harrison, if you're gonna trade and try to improve a backup point guard, you're not trading Wade Baldwin. You want to see what he can do. You know, Tony Douglas I'll give just a word about Tony Douglas. I like Tony Douglas a great deal. He is, he's a really solid guy in the locker room. Players like to play with him. He is capable of hitting shots. He is capable of some level of playmaking. He can come in and fill a role, but he's not your long-term answer backup point guard. He's just a guy. He's a guy. He's a good, solid, you know, third point guard, occasional second point guard. But if you're a playoff team with aspirations to win a series or two, if you want to make a run, then you can do better. If you're the Nets, Tony Douglas is instantly like your third best player. But the Grizzlies are not the Nets. The expectation level is higher. What you want is higher. You want more. You want better. You want to actually go as far as you can go. Tony Douglas, you can improve upon him. That's not a knock on Tony Douglas. He has a role to play in the NBA. It's just not 20 minutes for a playoff team. And that's kind of where they're flirting with these lineups where you put Tony in there and have Mike at the two. I like that as a concept. I mean, I like Mike Conley playing the two. We talked about that. There are a lot of good things I think you have to do that because he's your best shooter and he's so lethal offensively right now. But playing those two guys together, you have to have a little improvement, I think, at the one if you're going to do that on a consistent basis. That's why I say you have to look for that upgrade. And if Jarrell Martin and Andrew Harrison. Now, my favorite fake trade, you know, or one of my favorite fake trades, I suppose, is going to get Tim Frazier, who will be in action tonight for the Pelicans. And I think that package and gets you Tim Frazier, and you can there's probably some extra little bits here and there that you have to throw in there to make that thing work on both sides. But you know, the money itself, the salaries work. So that wouldn't be the issue, but maybe there may be some value you want to throw in a second round pick or something like that. I don't know. You can negotiate on that. But at the end of the day, Jarrell Martin to me is very expendable. And I think the caution here is if I'm the Grizzlies, I'm trading him now. Because I don't see, particularly if Brandon Wright's going to be healthy, you are going to presumably keep JaMychal Green. You have aspirations for Deontay Davis. He's a guy that you think is going to be special. And he has a skill set that fits the rest of this roster better than what Jarrell Martin does. Jarrell hasn't really shown that he can be anything consistently. He's just not, I don't know what his position is. I don't know what he does for your team. And then I didn't even bring into account Zach Randolph for the fact that Chandler Parsons is going to slide down. And if he plays, he's likely going to play some four at some point for you. Vince Carter, if he comes back, he's likely going to play some four for you. You know, those spots that you're looking for Jarrell Martin are just limited. He looks like he's blocked developmentally from this group. So, you know, if you keep him, his value is not going to go up. If you keep him, in fact, you're only going to start hamstringing yourself with what you want to do with him long term. So if there's any value there at all, and I think New Orleans makes sense to me because I think they'd want to experiment with, you know, a little young talent and the fact that he's, you know, he played college ball there at LSU, not far at all from New Orleans, and they would have quite a bit of familiarity with him. I think that would certainly help make him a little more appealing to them. You know, Andrew Harrison, you know, look, I mean, I think we've talked plenty on this podcast about Andrew Harrison. He's served his role, and I think, in fact, you know, you could understand why they tried so hard to keep him in the mix and to make it work alongside Mike Conley, because, you know, when you play the two-point guard lineup with Harrison and Conley, now, you know, Harrison's size really gives you an advantage there, and you can easily, you know, do some creative things defensively that you can't do with smaller guys like Tony Douglas or you know, even hypothetically Tim Frazier, something like that. But the problem is Harrison just isn't good enough to justify that. He's, you know, the offense isn't there. He's not fast. He's not fast of mind. The game is very, very quick, and he slows it all down too much. And it got to be where I think, you know, David Fizdale couldn't take it anymore. Just couldn't see it. You tried really hard. You tried that. I mean, you cannot say the Grizzlies didn't try like crazy to make it work with Andrew Harrison. Just not there. So, you know, let him go. Let him go and see what else you can do. So that's my favorite. That's why I think that package works. It works to me. It works especially well with New Orleans. But I mean, you're not going to get even a Tyus Jones or anything like that. You'd have to, you know, bump that up considerably. But a guy like Frazier, I think you could certainly get. And what the Grizzlies could get certainly depends greatly on what they'd be willing to offer. I don't know. I don't get the sense as of right now that they are dangling impact players. Even, you know, I mean, JaMychal Green would be the guy that would make some sense if they're not going to re-sign him or something. You know, he certainly would be an impact guy. But, you know, I don't get the sense that that's, you know, out there. I certainly don't hear anything you know, about Brandon Wright. There would be a temptation maybe to trade him at the, you know, as now that he's shown that he's healthy. Maybe you really could get something for him if you really like Jarrell Martin and you want him to develop. I don't know. I wouldn't do that personally, but maybe that's something that's out there. I haven't heard any of that stuff, so I think you have to kind of look a little lower if you're a Grizzly fan out there and you want to improve that backup point guard, and I think that's their number one thing they need to improve. Then I think you have to kind of set the sights a little bit lower with regard to what they're actually going to trade, who they're going to trade for. And so with that in mind, I think that's the package to me that would make some sense you could possibly talk about a Troy Daniels, you know, because it doesn't seem like David Fizdale's got a lot of long-term love for Troy. I don't think James Ennis, he's too valuable to the team as a kind of Swiss Army knife guy. He could do everything. He's very cheap on top of that. So I don't get the sense that he would be going anywhere. And everybody else is, you know, age, contract, or otherwise hampered. So that's pretty much, you know, what you're dealing with here with the Grizzlies, and they're not going to trade their pick. They can't really throw any kind of impact pick at all into the mix, you know, because their pick is encumbered, and next, you know, they can't because of the trade that involved, this one was the Wayne Ellington trade and Maurice Spates open up space to eventually trade Rudy Gay. That was the thought anyway. That's where this original trade, that means they won't have their first round pick this year. That's where that comes from. Then the Jeff Green trade is the one that will cost them a first round pick to Boston down the line as well, depending on when protections kick in. So their pick is encumbered, which means they can't just go all willy nilly. They can't trade the 18 pick. Can't trade the 20. You know, they have limitations on what they can do pick wise. So yeah, that means that their trade deadline probably is not going to be as exciting as some of the others. And we'll talk a little bit about what we've seen so far at the trade deadline here. Interesting stuff around the league over the last couple days, including a big one today. Yeah, I don't know if these are necessarily the, like, you know, dominoes. You know, people talk about, like, oh, the big dominoes got to fall before other deals are done or anything like that. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but I do think there are a couple of interesting trades to talk about, these bigger ones that we have seen. The one from earlier on Tuesday, Serge Ibaka going to Toronto in exchange for Terrence Ross and a 2017 first round draft pick. This, of course, you know, Ibaka was traded originally to Orlando in exchange for, in Orlando sent, you know, this was a pretty decent little deal. They sent, you know, Victor Oladipo and Ilyasova and the 11th pick, who had turned out to be Domantas Sabonis. That's a lot to give up. I'm not the world's biggest Oladipo fan. I actually didn't hate that deal for Orlando. I liked it more than most, you know, primarily because I expected that they would try to use some of their cap space to extend Ibaka, and I thought they would make some more logical moves around him. But then the rest of what the Magic did was just weird. It's just a weird off season, the Biombo thing and the Jeff Green thing. I don't know. I don't, you know, the money, the cap space was used very strangely, and so, you know, that lowered my expectation tremendously. And then, you know, you turn it into this, and I get that you're trying to, you know, do something and make your move, and, you know, you don't want to get stuck with Ibaka, and you don't want to lose him for nothing in free agency, but Lord have mercy, can you wait just a little bit longer? This deal would have been there. This deal would have been there right at the deadline. And I go back to the Pau Gasol trade, you know, that the Grizzlies traded the Lakers back in the day, and, you know, that trade ultimately ended up working out stunningly well for the Grizzlies. You know, Marc Gasol alone has made up for that, but they used that space that they opened up to trade into Zach Randolph's contract into that. So, you know, that turned out indirectly to be a good trade for the Grizzlies, but at the time it was terrible because they really didn't get much of anything that had any kind of current value, you know, whatsoever. But at the time, you know, and that trade was done well before the deadline too. And that was the biggest criticism I think that most people had, was that, you know, why didn't you just wait a little longer and just extract a little more? If you know you're going to trade and you know these suitors are going to be out there, and Serge Ibaka was not, you know, there was going to be no lack of suitors, especially because it looks like, you know, Paul Millsap's not out there anymore. So if you're looking for, you know, a premier or as good a four as you're going to get on the market, then that's pretty much it. And that market's still going to be there. I don't know why they didn't wait. I feel like you could have done a lot better than that. But for Toronto, they've always looked for that four. They've been close. They've tried different, you know, they tried Sullinger. They tried, you know, Patrick Patterson to an extent. This should be a big, big deal for them. This should put them in a different, potentially different category. This should give them a decent chance. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be enough, but it should give them a decent chance in the Eastern playoffs and give them a little boost. So, and I think plus they didn't give them anything of consequence. Terrence Ross, not a big deal because Norman Powell can take up a lot of those minutes and give you, you know, as much. And I like Norman Powell a lot, so I think that's no problem. Yeah, that's a bonus. The pick is not going to, you know, likely end up being anything. So you've really downgraded all the way around if you're Orlando. And I know the long term plan is murky as ever, but good move for Toronto. The other move, the one that will have a little more potentially direct impact on the Grizzlies, the Blazers and the Nuggets. Blazers, and this one does involve the Grizzlies pick, you know, which now belongs to the Blazers. It has traded and changed hands a few times. This time it goes from the Nuggets to the Blazers, along with Yusuf Nurkic, the Bosnian boogie, in exchange for Mason Plumlee. Essentially, and there's a second round pick, stuff like that. But that's the gist of the deal. Yeah, this was the kind of deal that if the Grizzlies are going to move JaMychal Green before the trade deadline, it's going to have elements of this deal to it, because they didn't want to pay. Portland didn't want to get stuck paying. They got a big, potentially big tax bill coming up, depending on how things go. And you know, if you want to pay Mason Plumlee, I mean, he's going to get a big contract. You know, he's going to get more than you think. It's a little like JaMychal Green in that sense, that he's going to get a lot more than you want to pay. Most teams, I would say, you know, a lot more than you would think. I shouldn't say want to pay. That's not fair, because you might. But Mason Plumlee could get $14 million, $16 million. That's probably on the high end a little bit, but maybe not that much. And frankly, in the last 2 years, if you've bet on contracts, how often have you bet and ended up too high? Not that often. These contracts are usually, they err on the side of too high as opposed to not high enough. Portland didn't want to take that risk. And for Denver, Plumlee is an excellent playmaker, and he allows you to work right alongside Jokic. You've got guys that can pass the ball really well, bigs that fit that system. And this kind of takes away. There was always that little tension with Jokic and Nurkic. They tried to play them together, didn't work. Felt like it probably should, but didn't. Nurkic has taken a step back. I really like the guy, but there, you know, he hasn't been playing all that hard, and looks like he could plateau, and so maybe he needs a fresh kind of a fresh thing and just to see what you can get out of him. I'll be curious to see how he does in Portland, and I think there's something there, and they get the pick. Portland's now got weaponry to do something real crazy if they want to. You know, they've got three first round picks in this draft, and theoretically, if you wanted to trade one of their, you know, bigger pieces like a CJ McCollum, then they could make a run at anybody out there. You know, if that's a package you want to put together to really stand out, you could trade three firsts and CJ McCollum for you could start talking about, you know, anybody that's out there. And I don't know who's actually out there, so to speak, but that if they wanted to go in that direction, they could also go, you know, dial it back and, you know, continue to accrue assets and, you know, use those picks and look ahead and all that. They could do that too. But just depends on what Neil Olshey and those guys want to actually do with that. But that trade will have some impact on the West and on the Grizzlies indirectly. And I think it's indicative of that scope of the trade is how teams are going to have to look at it when you've got restricted free agents or potential free agents. You know, both these guys that were involved You know, Mason Plumlee, Serge Ibaka, free agent, restricted free agent, those kinds of things. You have to think about, you know, what you're going to do. So that would be the template again. If the Grizzlies wanted to make a Jermichael Green trade, you would look and see, and you do that because you're nervous about what he's going to get. You're nervous about having to match an offer sheet that's too big, that is more than you want, based on, you know, the way that you budgeted out your offseason. So if that's the case, then the Grizzlies, and I suspect they're doing their due diligence behind the scenes. I don't anticipate a Jermichael Green trade. I don't think that's going to happen. But I think they are probably kicking the tires. Just, I think it would be irresponsible not to. You know, trying to project out into the future what Jermichael's going to make next year is tricky. And so, you know, you got to cover your bases. You got to cover your bases. And I don't know that Jermichael has tons of value around the league, but I think he's proven himself to be very valuable to the Grizzlies. And he may be a guy that's more valuable to you than to anybody else, and that may preclude you from making a deal. Just know that that's the sort of structure that's been out there, and now you kind of have a baseline. If nothing else, teams around the league have a little bit of a baseline of what some of these values are, which is always helpful when you're making deals. Time for the final pre-All-Star Break 3Q preview. This one, the New Orleans Pelicans, a team the Grizzlies should be able to beat. But, you know, we've seen these kinds of games happen before, and especially right before the All-Star break, teams sometimes can be a little distracted mentally, and that is, in fact, question number one. Which team will be ready for the break? Which team will actually be ready to play? Will the Grizzlies take, you know, a very professional approach to this thing? Will they be completely eye on the prize, finish off a team that they really should be beating, and go into the break feeling good? Or will they kind of wander a little bit and suffer one of those schedule losses that happen to teams that are right before the All-Star break and, you know, start to deal with vacation and everything else? If they take this game seriously, they should win. Even with Anthony Davis playing, he had a little injury scare on Monday, but looks like he's going to be fine. You know, he's going to play, and you know, he's great. But, you know, this is a team that the Grizzlies should be beating, and yeah, it's really just that simple. The Pelicans over their last 10 are 4-6, with some close losses mixed in, some not so close losses as well. Got completely crushed at home by the Jazz. They got completely crushed by Detroit in Detroit. That's less acceptable. But mixed in there are wins over San Antonio, a big win at Minnesota, which can be a tricky game for some teams, and then a couple wins against the Suns, which is not especially impressive. The Grizzlies should be beating this team, but you know, we shall see. Question number two, what happens with the rotation, in particular with, you know, Brandon Wright? Do we see Brandon Wright piggyback off of the game on Monday where he really took that next step? Do we see him now propel himself forward a bit? Do we see a few more minutes? Do we see a bigger role for Brandon Wright, or do they keep him roughly around 15 to 20 doing the same kind of thing? I think there's a little more there potentially, you know, for the Grizzlies. I think the Pelicans would serve as a pretty good matchup for him too. We'll see if they push the limit with him and try to find ways to expand out and expand, you know, that role for the Grizzlies going forward. I think that's a good idea, especially if they're not going to trade him and they're going to use him for the rest of the year. And I think that's probably what they're going to do. Yeah, time to kick the tires a little bit and really let your freak flag fly. Go see what you can do with Brandon Wright in the mix. And finally, number three, does Mike Conley finish out his best stretch of basketball with a bang against Drew Holiday, who is playing pretty terrific basketball in his own right? There's been a lot of rumors around New Orleans of late. There's the talk that they're going to trade to get Brook Lopez from the Nets. There was talk they're going to get Jahlil Okafor from the Sixers. And amid all that, Drew Holiday's had been playing well since he's come back. He's had a very nice season and very interesting matchup for Mike Conley. But I want to see if Mike Conley can take it to the next level. I mean, Eric Bledsoe, you know, put up 37 on Drew Holiday. And, you know, obviously a different kind of player. But, you know, Conley's capable, the way he's playing right now, of, you know, putting up 30 easily against a lot of guys. And, you know, he's just got that combination of the three-point shot working, getting to the foul line a lot, and then getting to the basket. And as long as he can do that without getting too many of those shots swatted by Anthony Davis, I think it could be a big night for Mike Conley. And I want to see him close out this stretch in style. You know, he told me earlier this week that he's, you know, really, like, he wants to be considered an all-star. He feels snubbed. He feels personally snubbed by what happened, and he wants to make it right. So he's played like it. The guy has absolutely been phenomenal since that quote-unquote snub. So I would expect it to continue and for him to close out this part of the season in style, and he'll get a chance to, you know, have a little break that he probably doesn't want, but it's a break that he's going to get nonetheless. So I'd like to see him go out in a big way before that break. Thanks so much for joining me here on Locked On Grizzlies. As always, you can check me out 7 to 10, Wolo and Peter in the morning, Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 87.7 FM. Check out Numbers Game in the Commercial Appeal. And you can check us out on Facebook as well. Search for Locked On Grizzlies or go to facebook.com/Locked On Grizzlies. For those of you, of course, that are big fans of the podcast, let me tell you something. This is a great spot for your company. If you want to reach men between the ages of 18 and 54, this is the place for your audiences. And here's something to consider. Recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to think seriously about purchasing products they learned about from podcasts. 60%, given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that advertise on their favorite podcasts. Our rates are very reasonable. Please shoot me an email, peter@peteredmiston.com. Shoot me a tweet @peteredmiston or a direct message, something like that. We can get all the information out to you. I'd love to have you on the podcast, become part of our family, and reach all those great folks out there that are listening. Thank you so much. You have been Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily podcast on the Memphis Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway's Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4 times gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.